Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, friends. Great to see you. My name is Dean. Yeah, sometimes I do podcasts without Lachlan, only when I want to talk to people about smarter things. No, this is just part two of a podcast that I was fortunate enough to do with my friend, Joanna. Joanna is, she's like manna for my brain. She's a teacher, educator, social media influencer, and she right-sides me on some issues, and we tend to have some intelligent conversations. And I was lucky enough to get an email the other day saying, hey, would you like to have an intelligent conversation with me? I'm like, I would, but I don't know if I'm capable. Anyway, we just wrapped up the first hour of what was supposed to be an intelligent conversation at Unlearn 16. The podcast school is in session. Class is in session. You can get that podcast wherever you get your fine podcasts. My friend Joanna joins us for part two of that conversation right now. I feel like it's like one of those, like, hey, we'll do your house for dinner.
Exactly.
We'll do my house
for dessert. Listen, the beginning of your podcast kind of sounds like it should be in Deliverance.
What? Just because of the harp, the harmonica, you don't like it?
I just feel like I've seen that movie and it doesn't end well. That's all I'm saying.
This one?
That's right.
There's no banjo.
That's not like, I don't know, bad things. There's like a horror movie going on in my head right now.
Have you seen that movie?
A long time ago.
I watched that and The Deer Hunter about a year ago. I'm like, I'm in for like a couple of movies that literally gave me PTSD as a child. I'm like, gotta be Deliverance. And the scene with Ned Beatty, you just can't get it out of your head for months.
The one from adulthood has to be The Hills Have Eyes. Have you seen that?
No, I won't watch that. I don't watch horror movies anymore. Do you watch horror movies? I can't watch horror movies at this age.
I love horror movies. There's
Are
two
you serious?
I won't watch. Well, yeah.
Which ones?
I watched The Hills Have Eyes. I can never take that back. But there is a part two. I have no idea what happens. I bought part two. I threw it in the garbage, still wrapped in the cellophane. I was not going to have any part of it.
Yeah.
And I didn't want it touching my other DVDs. The other one that I started watching, I got 40 minutes in and I shut it off, which I don't know another horror movie I've shut off.
What is it?
Human Centipede. I don't know what happens after the first 40 minutes.
Can I tell you what happens?
But the first 40 minutes is perhaps the worst thing.
Yeah.
And there's three movies. There's three movies. Again, I shut it off. I threw it in the garbage.
Yeah, I know. Human Centipede. Let me just get to that. For all of you who are unaware of what my good friend Joe,
esteemed
teacher,
you don't even need
academic. Just so you know, I want to tell you how it ends. They all get sewn together.
Well, no, that's in the first 40 minutes, Dean.
They stay together.
And the first 40 minutes
goes all the way down the line.
So everybody understands, it's melt the bomb. Listen. And the first person, this is the part I shut it off. This is the part. They're all sewn together. They've also had their knees cut, like they're so they can't get up. Their Achilles or something. So they're on their hands and knees. Mm-hmm. And the part I shut it off is when the very first person was forced to eat and then went to the washroom. That's it.
Because the second person.
Eject. Stop. Ah.
Listen, for everybody that doesn't understand it, and this is my podcast, so it's not good. It's good. Human Centipede is a horror movie about a guy who's obsessed with making a human centipede out of people that he would capture hostages, and he would mutilate them and treat them and such, and then he would sew them the mouth to the ass, and they would get a whole bunch of people, and they were like a human centipede, and the whole goal is to to see if it would work and to feed the first part of the centipede, because that's the only mouth, right? This worker, and it would make its way all the way back to the last person in the human centipede. And by that point,
listen, it would taste awful. You would feel the worst for the second person. But I don't know who the actor was who was the first person, but I felt their trauma. Like, I felt, I'm like, they're like having a nervous
very expressive. Yeah.
What's going to happen?
Yeah.
I always felt worse for the first person.
I believe. Listen, first of all,
imagine you're the second person.
First of all, it wasn't real, so I didn't feel bad for anybody. It was acting, right? But if you want a real life,
good acting,
unbelievable.
You know what? You know what?
It's the worst movie. It's the movie that made me the sickest. Human Centipede, by far. And
I also think, Dean, it's going on somewhere, some small town in like. Where they have backpackers traveling alone, like on the, you know, I just feel like we have a world where somewhere somebody is doing some weird crap. You know how we know this to be true? Because of what Germany did during World War II, what Japan was doing, all of those medical experiments that we, I know Canada was just, we've kept it a secret. I just don't know where it was happening. I'm assuming.
No, Canada's medical experiments back in the day gave us Pierre Poilievre.
Jeff.
That was his code name during the experiment. He was the second centipede. Anyway, listen, all I'm saying was, when it comes to movies, when it comes to horror movies, you nailed it. Don't watch Human Centipede. And listen, I enjoyed it because it was so goofy. But if you thought about it in real terms, it is the worst horror movie. That, and then there's one more. I got one more. For me, it's Human Centipede. I would never watch it again. One that I cannot watch again because it gave me nightmares. The only horror movie that ever gave me nightmares is The Ring. Have you seen The Ring?
Oh, really? Yeah, no, it didn't give me the TV. Is it because you were scared of the TV?
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I actually felt sick.
I felt physically nauseous watching Hostel in theaters.
Oh, Eli Roth. Yeah.
Because I also believe that that's happening. I also believe people with copious amounts of money, and let's be honest, we've seen it actually become true.
Recently.
When you have so much money, there's nothing you can't do. So what do you want to do? Well, you want to do the taboo. You want to do the things that nobody else can do. And in this movie, basically you will buy a person. Again, it's single backpack. Don't ever go buy yourself backpacking anywhere. Stupid.
No. Single backpacking hostel, just a recipe for mutilation. Yeah,
they sell them to rich people, and then rich people get them in a room, and they can do whatever they want with them in order to, you know, red rum them.
Yeah, I get it. I get what you're saying. Yeah, The Shining. Or that, to talk about movies that made me scared. That's movies. Great movie. Yeah, it's still a great movie. Speaking of those stories that you hear, like, you're sure that that's going on in the world.
Yeah, I do.
You know, the are you watching the Puff Daddy shit?
I don't know if I can. So I stay away from that. I stay away from a lot of stuff like that. So Anna will make me watch it. So
she's your house is one of those houses where she's like, hey, you got to watch this. You're like,
yeah, I don't want to. And then I feel sick. Like, the program we just went through on Netflix, where I'm going to be watching that story about the kid Drake, and what's it called? Where he was, where awful SA happened to young kids in the entertainment industry.
Oh, yeah. Are you talking about P. Diddy? Is that what you're talking about?
No, this documentary wasn't about that. It was about what happened to him when he was a kid. Anna, what's the name of the Drake documentary? Quiet on Set.
There's a documentary about something that happened to Drake when he was a kid?
Not the Drake you're thinking of. You're thinking of Drake
Bell.
Yeah. So actors and what went on. And then all my head goes back to, obviously, who my hair was inspired by, which is what happened to Corey Haim when he was a kid, right? Mm. And Corey Feldman and all of that stuff. And then the ramifications of that. And the P. Diddy thing to me is just like, so I haven't watched anything.
Leaning into, well, hang on though. And I get it.
And too much power is problematic.
Well, so you know how there are two sides to every conspiracy, right? The conspiracy is, and we've heard the Epstein stuff for years, started to get clued into it in the last 10 years. And we're like, can't be. can't, like, there can't be a group of these people. To your point about the hostile stuff,
I don't know if it shocked me.
There can't, it shocked me.
Too much money.
Yes.
In the hands of people.
People who can't get a dopamine hit from anything else because they have everything else.
And they just figure out what their thing is. And it tends to, you know, again, going to the taboo. Like, obviously in hostile, it's about, you know, harming, like physically torturing. Not that this other part, SA, isn't physically torturing. But it's just what's not okay for everybody else in society. And we're going to make that okay for you.
Yeah.
Because you have enough money and enough power to circumvent what's taboo for everybody else. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is, and it sounds awful, but an element of, like, we see it happening again and again, because back in the day, wouldn't that have been true for kings and queens? Like, it would have been true. You know, they were allowed to do whatever they wanted, and then everybody just, because they had enough money and they had enough power.
Yeah.
Because we don't actually have, which would be lovely, rule of law.
No.
We talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, right? And you bring up a great point. And I know we're joking around about television movies and it got us started about, like, secret societies of people, rich people that like to do really nefarious things. But, you know, to your point, you're like, I don't know if this exists. I kind of believe it exists. But we're seeing it kind of that play out. And it's like, you know, the Puff Daddy thing looks like in its early stages, that's exactly what it is, right? Mm-hmm. That it is a cabal of, like, Puff Daddy, bunch of dudes in the record industry, hearing names of politicians that are coming out that all took part in these things called freak-offs, a freak-off party.
What does that mean?
It's a party where anything goes. Any protege from Usher when he was 14 to Justin Bieber when he was 14 have all been through these. They're called, I believe they're called flavor camps. That's what he called them. Flavor camps, widely documented on Howard Stern, widely documented in interviews with Justin Bieber, Usher, widely documented, including an interview with Usher that's going around now from like 15 years ago where he's like, yeah, Daddy, I'm a dad now. I wouldn't send any of my kids to any of the Puff Daddy flavor camps, I can tell you that. And so, you know, you think about it and you're like, how is this allegedly the things that we're hearing about trafficking all kinds of things, people,
well, that's
minors.
Why his Homeland Security hit both of his houses. So, which
three.
Was
New York, Miami, LA. Yeah.
New York, Miami, all
LA.
All the same time.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot. And, but then my head goes to, like, okay, so all of these things are happening to these young musicians, and we can talk about all of these kids that are in harm's way. My question is, where are their parents? Right. Where are their, did their parent, literally, this is my head, their parents sold them. It was a trade. Oh, you're going to make my son, you're going to make my daughter, that you're going to put them in the next movie, you're going to give them a record label or whatever. Cool. Go ahead and go off with your, live with your manager. Go to a grown person's party at 12, 13, 14. You've been sold. And your parents did that. And it reminds me of that whole Anthony Rapp thing, because I was all, like, when I heard that story with Kevin Spacey, and I'm like, why was a 14, he was 13, or why was he at a grown-up party, all adults in that room? Where were his parents? What happens there? Like, how do you just, oh, well, now he's on what? A play? I don't have to parent him anymore at 13 years old? Mm-hmm. At 13 years old, when the lights went off and on the street, I had to be at home. Like, I don't, you're being bought and you're selling your kids.
That's
to
exactly,
whatever it is.
100%. You know, we're seeing, it's funny how in the moment, you remember the Michael Jackson documentary with Martin Bashir years ago?
Somebody where he's sold, like, those kids. Who says go sleep over at Michael Jackson's house?
Well, and he's like, well, of course there's nothing wrong with it. We're just sleeping. And how 7.5 billion people at the time were like, yeah, that's reasonable. Let me play another clip of that same variety, Joe. Okay. And this is like, we played this earlier in the week. This is Justin Bieber, early days, after he gets Usher, who was his manager at the time, to give him as a person to Sean Combs, Puff Daddy. I want you to watch this. Like, to your point, what mother, what father?
She signed him over to Scooter very young.
14, 15. Like, Scooter Braun, right, let's have a chat.
My son, not you're my manager, but no, you're really responsible for my kid.
Guardianship in the music industry. And no. Now we're hearing about, well, let's just watch this clip, shall we?
Justin, you ever seen the movie 48 Hours? Right now, he's having 48 hours with Diddy, him and his boy. They're having the times of their lives, like, you know, where we hanging out and what we doing. We can't really disclose, but it's definitely a 15-year-old's dream. You know, I have been given custody of him. You know, he signed to Usher.
I'm signed to Usher.
I had legal guardianship of Usher when you know, he did his first album. I did Usher's first album. I don't have legal guardianship of him, but for the next 48 hours, he's with me. So, and we're going to go full, buck full crazy.
We're going crazy.
You know?
And you wonder why Justin seems to have gone through so much. Like, you look at these individuals as grown men and you're like, why do they seem so broken? And sometimes, like, you wonder, right? Now, obviously, whatever, legal guardianship. I just don't understand parents. Mm-hmm. Nobody can speak until, like, those people speak on it. Whatever evidence is given about what's gone on with P. Diddy and what's whatever of that. My first and only comment is, how on earth are parents in the entertainment industry, in any industry, because, by the way, this has happened in athletics too, right? How do you just give over guardianship and assume that somebody who's going to protect and take care of your kid? Like, I just, you know, and I know enough people in the entertainment industry at this point to know that it's not like there's more evil people. I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, Hollywood's filled. No. Here's what I know. People with no accountability and too much money will do some bad things. And letting your kid around people with too much money and no accountability has the percentage ability or potential for it to go very, very badly. But everybody's doing it. It's like, oh, but he got a record. Oh, but she got a lead role in a movie. Oh. Like, I watched old clips. I don't know if you've seen this on TikTok, speaking about the power of TikTok. Old clips of Brooke Shields at like 13, 14, 15 years old, being on talk shows and listening to her mom was with her all the time, but listening to how grown-ass men spoke about this little girl, 13 years old, and what they said about her and what was okay. And I'm like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't remember those talk shows back then, but it was just insane. And it was like the entire society said that was fine. I mean, and then it's a little reminiscent of Bill Cosby going on Larry King, talking about how he would roofie people. But quite saying it out loud. And we lived in a culture, and this is the interesting part. This is the weird part, too. We lived in a culture that didn't give a crap.
Right.
We just care now.
Right.
Nobody cared when he had that. How on earth did nobody... His handlers didn't say, what did you just say? No, because there's that stupid thumb up.
I know your thumbs up.
I don't know how I do it.
That's okay.
Nobody said to him coming off that show, what just happened? What did you just say? You want to know why? Because I don't know what year that was in, but look at how long it took for anything.
40 years. It took 40 years. The dude was like serially assaulting women for 40 years.
But you know, even after I know it was in his stand-up and all of that, but like even after all of that, like it's just like this is what was acceptable. I remember my mom saying, she was a nurse for a long time, and she goes, you know, what went on in the hospital? back in the day, 70s and 80s. And what was acceptable for these doctors, predominantly men when she was there, to say to nurses, to say to secretaries, the way they spoke and treated women and what went on at hospitals today, they'd all be in prison. There wouldn't be a doctor left standing.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, it's funny because I think back to words like, you know, we want to keep things the way it phrases. We want to keep things the way they are. You hear the political rhetoric. I hear it in business elite rhetoric. We don't want people coming into our house. Parental rights, parental control, right? Yeah. All the things that feed into those ideologies. And then we look at the story and we, you know, it touches us on so many levels, it touches me on levels where it's like, oh my God, maybe these cabals are true. Like maybe the things, all the crazies on that side are saying, you know, might have some accuracy. And you're like, no, it's not that. And they talk to you and you share some common sense about, you know, wealth and people that have stories and secrets to hide and blackmail. That America was built on blackmail. Canada largely built on blackmail too. I mean, you know, it's an age old strategy is how do you put someone in a position where you make them feel like they owe you one? Get them with their pants down in some compromising position, take a picture and tell them. That's how Donald Trump became the fucking president of the United States, for crying out loud. Ask the people at that Chatham Asset Management that own the National Enquirer, the catch and kill stories, right? So I find the culture of that story truly fascinating, but I also find it amazing that we still have politicians and people in our lives in 2024 that are campaigning and not necessarily for the right to hurt kids like we're seeing here, but they're campaigning to keep them out of trouble in some capacity, to allow them in certain aspects to have no rules, to not be accountable legally. You know, in Canada, case in point, there are no RICO laws like there are in the States. There are, like, the reason why Puffy got picked up, there are serious sex trafficking laws from state to state. Canada does not have those things, right? And you will literally, in some states, see people take votes on whether or not they want to ban child marriage. That vote was defeated in a couple of states in the United States this year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's active involvement from groups of people that don't see anything wrong with that kind of culture, or at least want to keep the door open so that they're not punished for those consequences legally. Like, and it's a stretch. I understand it's a stretch, but that's why you see so many people coming out in favor of, you know, we don't want to overcomp, we don't want to boil things down in bureaucracy. We don't want to prevent people from onerous, you know, laws. Sure, sometimes someone might get into trouble with a young person, but it doesn't mean you should destroy their lives. And then I look at somebody who's ever been, like, pinched for objectifying a child, right? And I'm like, they're beyond saving from the second they get pinched. They're like, there is no law in the United States or in Canada, in my mind, that should say, this is 3 to 5 years if you hurt a child, or take the innocence from a child, or if you abuse your power in the face of children while they are in your stead, right? In any of those capacities. We don't have those laws.
I'm going to go you one step further. I've talked to quite a few people about SA, especially what they've lived through, right? There's two aspects to that trauma. The initial trauma of the SA when they were a kid. And then they will all inevitably say the worst and most detrimental trauma and the thing that now I live with because it's full of shame was the fact that I wasn't allowed to say anything, was the fact that my entire family kept it quiet, was the fact that nobody, like, it, everybody said, like, they could have blamed them a little bit, or at the very least they say, well, we're not going to talk about this in public because we don't want everybody knowing our family business. We just won't let that uncle come to dinner anymore.
Yeah.
That, to me, SA, horrible, go to prison. But that kid, that individual can experience that and still, and in my opinion, you know, can come through it and can heal and can do all those things. What you can't heal from is that happening to you. And then your mom saying, shh, don't talk about it.
You're going to upset the family.
How do you ever heal from that? Because you're not allowed to talk about it. If you can't talk about how can you heal, your whole family or the people that find out about it, they don't want to prosecute. They don't want to point fingers. They don't want to say, this is what happened. What? And Dean, I'm telling you right now, that is the cultural phenomenon. And what's going on in parts of Hollywood is a simple reflection. The only reason we're shocked by that is because nobody's talking about it happening down the street. It doesn't get the headlines.
No.
But I'm telling you, like, this kind of access and this kind of, I'll say degeneracy, but like the shame associated with it, and then the lack of conversation and the lack of ownership and the lack of accountability and all of that that comes after. To me, that's a cultural phenomenon. Did you see the movie Poor Things?
Yeah, Emma Stone. I thought she was great.
Okay. So to me, that's what this, that movie, everybody, for some people who didn't like the movie, they really hated the fact that it felt pedophilic. Like it felt, because she was this young entity and then she was going out in the world and men were taking, not really taking advantage of her, but men were attracted to her very young innocence. And we're, that's disgusting. That's disgusting. That's horrible. What do you think's going on? It's a reflection of culture. It's a reflection. We have guys like the Andrew Tates of the freaking world and his entourage talking about how it makes perfect sense that men would want women to have no sexual experience, be very young, so that they can, and they say this out loud. They say the quiet things out loud. So I get to mold her into the person so she hasn't been used up. That has been a culture in Western society forever. How dare you? I love it when people point to other countries like saying, oh, that's so horrible the way they treat. Look, that cultural underpinning is at the root of the treatment of women as incapable of having their own mind, control their own bodies. Look what's going on in the United States. Control their own future. And the guy is going to be there in some sort of pseudo parental role. That's been women's history for thousands and thousands of years. It's only been in the last 30 years that that started to change. Last 30. And by the way, you have a whole group of people saying, we want to go back.
Yeah, when you don't want things to change. Yeah.
Where men were men and women were women. What does that mean? When women shut the hell up, we're young and innocent, and I get to, and the guy gets to control their entire world.
Isn't that MAGA and Maple MAGA? Like, isn't that the...
I wish it was just them.
Well, I know. I know it's really not just them. But, like, and we can talk about the subsets. But yeah, that culture has really infiltrated conservative politics, right? And it, listen, it's everywhere. Yeah. I'm not just saying, oh, it's only there. Yeah. Degeneracy is everywhere, all walks of life, every color of every political spectrum. Every sexual orientation has degeneracy. It doesn't matter what you do. Straight, gay, non-binary. There are people who misrepresent everything everywhere. Let's just lay that at our feet for just a quick second. Okay. The idea that in our society, the patriarchy is about to lose something.
Yeah.
That is the
pushback, right?
And in the patriarchy is the reserve. We reserve the right because we are men. We are biblically the head of the house. We're allowed child brides.
Yeah.
That's literally
speaking of selling,
grained.
Everybody's wondering why it's okay to sell because women have always been bought and sold. Mm-hmm. Call it whatever you want. I don't care. You have a dowry, you have a ring, you play for the wedding. Women have been historically in this. Stop talking about somewhere else. In this country, historically, they're the property of their fathers until they're the property of their husbands. That hasn't changed for very long. Like, you know what I mean? That shift in legality hasn't been around for that long. And everybody's pretending as though that's not the thing. And but so when we look at the culture that still exists and that, you know, whatever's going on in different elements of wealthy, the wealthy world elite, it is going on everywhere else. Just nobody's talking about it because it doesn't get TV play.
So can I ask you a question as a teacher?
Yeah.
You see the child right advocates, the people that are like, hey, listen, we want full child rights over our child. And it's not just about the education.
Oh, yeah. No, no. Parental rights, not child
rights. Rights. Sorry. Parental rights, not child rights.
You don't want children to have rights.
No. That fits right in. That hustles right into the wake of this conversation.
Sure.
Does it not?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. And I always come back because people are always like, oh, well, teachers seditiously, secretly, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I don't know what you think's going on in school. It's ridiculous. But I would advocate as a teacher more children's rights than anything else. Not teacher rights, not parents' rights, children's rights. What do they have the right to? What do they have the right to be protected from? And how much money is our society willing to spend in order to ensure that happens? If we stopped funding the criminal justice, like, if you know, understanding that we're throwing all these people in prison, but if we took all that money and we funneled it in to how do we protect kids? How do we empower kids? Right? I'll give you a perfect example. A kid gets smacked up on her face. Like, let's say a 10-year-old gets smacked. No, a 12-year-old, because I think our laws say you can smack a 10-year-old. Don't ask me. I'm confused with our
laws.
Is it
okay to hit your children? Is it okay to like capitally punish your child in this?
Here's what I think. I don't know if I'm going to be I don't know if I'm going to recount it. So I'm sure people will recount.
Again, that culture is a big, hey, don't spare the rod. Right. You'll spoil the child.
Well, let's say, I think from the age of 4, Ontario, Canadian criminal law, 4 until 12.
Spankable?
Yes.
You can hurt your child?
Oh, open hand. I think there's weird rules like open hand, not on skin. I feel like there's weird rules like that.
Let's look them up.
There's a law. There's age limitations to how.
Yeah. So here we go. Parents, caregivers. Oh, you hustled your caregivers into that whole thing. Can use corrective force or physical punishment that a minor is, or transitory and trifling in nature. If your minor is transitory or trifling in nature. For example, spanking or slapping a child hard enough that it leaves a mark or bruise would not be considered transitory and trifling. Teachers cannot use any force under any circumstances. I wish every single one of my elementary and junior high teachers knew that. Is it illegal to spank? Nah. Spanking is a form of physical punishment parents can use on children. Does right. not have an age gap here. So that is very, very interesting.
Right.
Criminal law and managing child's behavior. And that is from the Justice Canada site. There you go. As always, the Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by our friends at factcheck.io. Factcheck.io. Do you believe? The good people at FactCheck are a quorum of software professionals, psychological professionals, journalists, that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information, and alternative sources. And there's going to be a weapon button too, where you can turn that information around and put it back out there accurately to combat disinformation. The good people at factcheck.io are right now testing their beta version of their free program. Yes, it will be free for anybody who wants to use it. They want to battle disinformation because it is a problem. Go to factcheck.io today, factcheck.io, factcheck.io. The world's most robust fact-checking disinformation software for news, social media, video, print, anything spoken word. These people are on the tip. And they use some of the finest software technology to be able to give you the advantage when it comes to getting agency back in your life, when it comes to information that you read. Go to factcheck.io today for more information. Sign up for the beta test, factcheck.io. The Dean Blundell Show is brought to you by factcheck.io. Factcheck.io, makers of the world's most comprehensive fact-checking software. that have been very busy building some software so that you can fact check anything that you read. It doesn't matter if it's got a URL, you'll be able to fact check it. Alternative sources, origins, whether or not it was an organic or inorganic campaign, whether or not you can trust the people that are putting out the information so that you can give yourself agency over information in the age of disinformation. Again, want to beta test their product? They're going to launch it in the next month or two. Go to factcheck.io today. FAKTCHEK.io. Back to the show.
Like, what do we do? Like, so what do we do? If we think that let's assume for a heartbeat, violence begets violence. Let's just, you know, take that in. And a kid gets slapped, yeah. Okay? Or a kid gets hit. And let's say it's over a certain age or whatever. So that kid has two choices. Am I going to tell somebody about it? And if I tell somebody about it, what are the ramifications? How is that going to be handled? And every kid knows of any sort of, you know, cognition, I'll be taken out of my house and I'll be put in foster care unless I can go with family members. And by the way, family members, if I have a parent that's hitting, family members are probably going to be of the same mentality. So am I going to want to go? Let's assume that for a second. Mm-hmm. So my choice is every once in a while I take a hit, but I don't tell anybody because my only option is foster care and nothing happens really to my parent.
Not just physical abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse, verbal abuse.
We have this horrible system in play that doesn't protect the kid. And to understand this, look, I'm going to go even this far. There's a lot of parents, and this is a dangerous area, but there's a lot of parents who were beat as kids, right? Because it's generational. And when it was okay, you know, a shoe, a spoon, whatever. And every so often, I've talked to these parents. I've sat and had
conversations. You know how many spoons and belts this guy got? Exactly. Yeah, I got spoons and belts. And I grew up thinking that was normal. And then when I had kids, I'm like,
and I remember asking myself this one question. This is just one progressive question that I managed out of my own brain at that point in time. Very ignorant, very stupid. I thought to myself, I love these kids. Why would I hurt them? Why would I hurt someone I loved?
And it's, in my opinion, when you have a parent. So let's say the parent has gone through whatever kind of.
Yeah.
And they never said anything because, by the way, back then, it wasn't just acceptable. It was just spare the rod, spoil the child. It was like,
yeah, if you didn't spank your kid out of hand at a picnic, everybody would look at you.
What a loser.
You get in charge of that. Fucking take care of that.
We should
right
take
now.
That kid away because you're obviously not a good parent.
Yeah.
And so when you pass that down to the next generation and the next generation doesn't do that, and every once in a while, maybe a slap or whatever, you know what I mean? Something that, in my opinion, is still not okay. How should that be handled? And I think the very first way all of that gets handled, what it should be, is a zero-sum game, meaning there's no condition under anything in which you're allowed to physically harm your child. I also apply the same, by the way, to drunk driving. If you're going to have a beer, don't drive. Because it is very confusing. And when you blur the lines, you know, what are you doing? Testing your blood alcohol level? No, you're like, I feel okay. I've had one beer. I'm fine. Just because I haven't eaten today doesn't really. It's blurring lines. I don't think that should be blurred.
Mm.
I am a firm, and a lot of parents be like, well, no, you're taking parent rights away. Well, this is where I think child rights should be bigger.
Yeah, 100%. And consequences for not
their houses and put them in foster home. They're not that's not the necessary solution. Is there something else? Can we educate these parents? Can we force them into some sort of
no? Because the law protects them, and that is what certain cultures and political parties are trying to do: is to keep that law and the protective nature or the ability to hurt your child still intact.
It's just infuriating.
And you know that, and I know that.
Infuriating.
Every time I would see it, every time I'd see it on social media, parental rights. We want to be able to teach our kids whatever we want to teach our kids. We don't want our children to be able to tell their teachers our secrets. Or family secrets.
Listen, I've taught for a very long time.
Yeah.
I've never been asked to keep a secret. I've taught to all, like, it's not, that's not how it works. Yeah. Every very serious thing that has ever been brought to me, the very first phone call, the very first thing I say to the kid is, we're going to call your parent. And the very first phone call I make is to that parent to come down so we can have this conversation. Has it always worked out perfectly? Of course not. And they've been some of the hardest conversations. But this idea of secret keeping is super, is
well,
like,
we dealt with that in the last podcast that we did. You're a teacher 22 years, and you're like, hey, listen, you might think you might think your kids are observing the rules of your family in the school, but they're telling us everything.
This is what happens. Kids will come to me and they'll say, Joe, can I talk to you? And I'll say, absolutely. They'll say, I don't want you to tell anybody what I'm going to tell you. I'll stop them right there and I'll say, listen, if you or somebody you know is in harm's way, I will be telling your parents immediately. If you're telling me that your parents are putting you in harm's way, we are going to call the authorities immediately. Mm-hmm. If you're going to tell me who, you know, so-and-so, you know, lied about your crush and cheated on a test, we're going to handle that. But those big issues, I say straight up, this is how I will handle it, period, because it's just like a psychiatrist, right? You're coming to me. If you're coming to me with something that can hurt you, that's why this whole ridiculous notion about what somebody wants to be called, stop it. Mm. Who's that hurting?
Nobody.
I go to school. I want to be called Joe. You have to call my mom. Stop it.
Yeah.
To me, that's silly. There's not a single teacher that's advocating hormone therapy and making secret meetings with doctors. Asinine. But a student getting comfortable with their name or what they want to be, go away.
But it's like that with everybody, dude. I said this to a buddy of mine the other day. He was, you know, buddy of mine, a guy I know. And we're in that age now where you're friends with like people for 20 years, you know, and you'll talk to someone you haven't talked to in 5. Hey, man, how's it going? There's all these gays. You're like, oh, man, I totally forgot you were one of those guys. And I was having a conversation with a gentleman the other day who I used to hang out with. And it's the same conversation I have with a couple people that you're like, that's why I don't like that guy. And once again, the pronoun thing comes up because he wanted to have a go at Justin Trudeau, right? Everybody wants to have a go at Justin Trudeau. Every time we do a podcast with anybody from someone who's not from the East, they're all like, you live in that Trudeau. And I'm like, oh, relax. I don't care.
So funny. And I would I'd like to have a go at Trudeau. Not about that. About indigenous rights. Yep. There's a list of actual quantifiable things that are serious things that we should be having a talk about rather than axe the tax, you freaking moron. But continue.
Well, this gentleman who just hates Trudeau for whatever his reasons are, and there's plenty of reasons to not like politicians. Really matter. His big thing was, he felt like Justin Trudeau was making him feel. He felt like Justin Trudeau was making him feel bad because he didn't understand, wasn't opposed to it, didn't understand the pronoun game.
You know what? At least he was being honest. There's a sliver of a window there. Because if more people could just be honest and say, he's making me feel bad because I don't get it.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Let's get it.
Yeah. No, but here's the thing. You know this as an educator. There are certain subsets of people who don't want to be challenged with that information because they feel stupid. They don't want to get it. And so they just get mad. And then I started thinking, I wonder how many people are mad at the gay community.
Most.
Because they think that the gay community is undergoing some kind of campaign. Right? They've paid for a multi-billion dollar worldwide campaign to paint sidewalks a certain color, to put the LGBTQSIA flag on bank machines, and to force people to use pronouns with which they are unsure where they go. Listen, now, as ridiculous as that sounds, let me just kind of tie that up in a nice little bow. I asked this gentleman, okay, you don't understand, that's great. You're mad because you're forced, you feel like you're forced to call people by their pronouns. Yeah, it's fucking stupid. And I said to him, how many times has it happened?
Yeah.
You know what his answer was?
Never.
None yet. Right. But he's so jacked up for the chance that it might.
Because it's been, look, and it's a touch point everybody can really tap into that makes everybody feel instantaneously uncomfortable. You know what I think's funny? Because everybody will say, oh, you know, because I look the way I do, and, you know, I'm gay and I'm out and blah, blah, blah. And I maybe look non-binary, or some people assume to me that I'm trans, even though I'm not. The funny part is, you think students who are going through that that identity confusion or whether or not they're gay or bi or whatever, you think I would be the person they'd come to? It's the opposite. Kids who are working through that, mm-hmm. not the kids that are who they are. Guess what? Everybody knows who those kids are, and they've told their parents. And if the parents don't look it, they've also told them to piss off. That's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the kids that are struggling. They're not knocking at my door. I'm too on the nose, right? They're not, they can't. I'm too much.
What do you mean you're too on the nose? Because you're openly gay?
Yes.
You don't think that they're going to come to you and ask right. you about their sexuality?
You would think that kids who are questioning their sexuality, who might be gay and are uncomfortable about it, and they don't really know, the whole world thinks I'm the door that's getting knocked at. Joe, can I have this big conversation with you? I'm telling you, 21 years?
Nothing.
Doesn't happen. They go to other teachers. They go to other teachers because if they knocked at my door, it's solidified. And they're not ready to solidify anything.
Yeah, because they're just curious.
They're curious confused. Or they're scared or they're confused. And those emotions do not have them knocking at my door. Which I think is also, I would love to know, I don't know anybody else's sort of, you know, conversation, like exposure about that or the way other teach. I just saying from my personal experience, there's been lots of kids at my school who have, you know, gay, who are bi, who are trans, who are this, who are that, pronoun thing is new. They don't knock at my door. They don't. And I mean this metaphorically, stand too close to me. If they're ready to be everything they want to be, then cool. Then they'll stand there. Because then they feel, right?
Kinship.
But if they're standing next to me and they might be gay, I promise you, their opposite sex boyfriend or girlfriend is right beside them. Because they're not ready. They're not comfortable with that.
Interesting.
And I've said that a lot because it's funny because at school, you have kids, different kids with different issues. And it seems very logical to send the gay teacher to help the gay kid or possibly the gay kid or the African-American teacher to help the African-American kid with their, right? It just seems like, well, those are the categories. But those categories really don't work for kids because a lot of kids aren't thinking in those categories or the categorization itself is making them way too uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's whichever teacher they have felt sort of a connection, a safe connection to maybe, but that has a bit of distance from the thing they need to talk about. That's the teacher they go to.
Fascinating.
Not me.
But you know what? It's fascinating because you're talking about stereotypes, right?
Yeah.
A little bit where you're,
yeah, sure.
you're sort of, you're, yeah, they do. And they're like, hey, listen, I don't want to be mixed up in that stereotype. And even from an administrative standpoint, you're explaining it like they don't send stereotypical people in to talk to the stereotypical child.
Well, because right? it's just like, well, we just categorize people so easily, right? And it just makes sense. So you go handle that issue. I'm like, that's not going to play out.
Yeah.
It's not me. The amount of problems that I've handled, like big, big things, have nothing to do with sexuality, have to do with gender identity or presentation at all. And, you know, over the time I've had, there's been a lot of very big things that we've had, you know, dealing with families and parents and really transformative issues. Funnily enough, I've had more kids come to me. Like, I'll say things like, my kids know I don't drink, I don't do drugs. I never have, I don't get it. And I joke with them and I try to like,
pot? You don't even have a beer? Them. No beer, no pot, no nothing.
No. Okay. And I try to beg them, don't do it.
Yeah.
Right? speaking of something like begging somebody not to rewire their brains when they're 15 years old and they're using drugs or they're using alcohol.
And it's so, no way to cope. You're not teaching any kid how to get through an issue by telling him to numb himself in any capacity. Totally great advice. Yeah.
Sure. But here's the funny part. And I know, and I'll say to the kids, I know nothing about addiction because I feel very uneducated. I feel very, even though I've gained some education, I just don't feel like I have a firm grasp on how to handle addiction and that illness. I don't know. I don't know the best words to say. I feel
about 80s t-shirts. You're a little addicted to those.
Just say no. Yeah. But kids will come. The amount of kids I have talked to with their parents and talking about facilities and rehab and what they have to go through and how they're going to come off this and when they feel this way or what they've done and what their parents have. So many. Mm. I say, don't talk to me about it. They come and talk to me about it.
Yeah.
I say, I'm not the person. They come and talk to me about it.
But that's about a relationship, right? You know, they come to you for,
Again, I'm not on the nose.
Yes.
In that thing, whatever that thing is, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's better teachers. Like I've always said, somebody that's been able to like deal with addiction in their personal life always, I think, makes a really phenomenal person to speak to because they've had personal experience, especially to kids. They've had personal experience and they understand the drives. They understand the why. I don't understand the why. And I always thought they'd make really, really good counselors and teachers because they have that.
Yeah. You know, and you bring up a great point. And I can tell you from experience that as someone that was an alcoholic, someone who went to AA, someone that was 7 years ago, someone who really chased down answers in terms of why do I drink too much? Like, what is my problem?
Yeah.
Because I think when people decide, and it's like that for so many different people, right? It's that I connect with younger people, like my son, who's also an addict. He doesn't drink, doesn't smoke anymore. He was in rehab a couple of times. So I watch him go through that, right? And I'm like, hey, listen, hands off the wheel. To me, I didn't have a problem. All of a sudden, I've got a problem, and I'm dealing with it at the same time as him. And so we're commiserating. We're talking about it. We're dealing with what it is that it takes to get through this obsession with something, right, that is unhealthy for you.
Right.
And it's amazing because I look at the idea that my sons, all three of them, are well aware of my whole life, well aware of all of it. I tell them the same thing all the time, going back to children of child addicts or children from homes where one of the parents struggling or there's an issue that's hurting their child. That hurt my children. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm happy to say it.
Yeah.
I have been in rooms with my son's teacher who said, hey, your son talked about your divorce, talked about a fight that you and your ex had the other night, talked about you drinking. And I want you to know that. Like a teacher has said that to me. Called me into the office years and years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
There's no abuse. There's none of that stuff. It was just bad parenting. And I remember thinking to myself at that time, these kids talking about what goes on in our house and school.
They never stop.
Not only do they never stop, from that moment forward, so I quit drinking. This is now 7 years ago. So it was a couple years after that. I have an absolute principle with my children. You can tell anybody anything
there
that happens in this house.
That is okay. I want to really focus on that because I honestly think that would change the world. If we can teach our kids to not keep secret, like if the parent activists all want no secret, I'm in. Absolutely no secrets and no shame.
Mm.
If we can do that for the next generation, that's transformative. Mm-hmm. Mental health, addiction, education, criminality. I'm telling you right now, if you can teach your kids and we can tell that next generation, don't you ever keep a secret for anybody ever. And don't you ever carry shame. You figure out how to talk about it. You figure out how to separate what has happened from who you are. Feeling guilty about doing something wrong for feeling, rather than feeling shame about the character, the person you are, life-changing.
It is the only thing.
Life-changing.
It is the only thing that has changed my children.
Life-changing.
Unconditional love and unconditional comfort, knowing that they're safe, that I don't have to make them feel duplicitous about their lives saying, hey, don't tell anybody about what dad did here. You can tell everybody anything you want about anything that goes here. Yeah. Do you know why I tell my kids that? I'll tell you. And listen, this is the truth.
Yeah.
Is because that makes me an accountable parent.
Sure.
That makes me make greater decisions. Mm-hmm. That makes me act in their best interest. But I don't need that anymore. Right. What I need is to have a relationship with my children. And if I'm making good decisions, if I'm encouraging them to think for themselves,
be
empowered, take
have boundaries, be healthy.
Absolutely. Boundaries with people. If I'm teaching them conflict resolution, if I'm not acting inappropriately around them, snapping at people in traffic, smoking drugs, pounding vodka.
We're not allowed to snap at people in traffic.
No, I've really had to work on that piece. Like, no, I'm not even kidding you. Like 2 years ago, I said to my kid, he's like, why do you always yell at people in traffic? I go, buddy, you're right. It affects you negatively. I need to work on that.
And he hates it. And it's like, you're just yelling at me right now.
I'm going to work on that with you. I'm going to work on that with you. Okay. Yeah. We'll do that.
Listen, I think this is a beautiful end note because I do have to feed a bit of an addiction. It's not an addiction.
Where are you going?
Listen, my grandma used to go gambling, my grandma and my mom. And my mom has, you know, she's gone through it. Whenever she feels good, she'll say, Joe, do you want to go gambling? And tonight, we think on Good Friday, it's the best time.
So sacrilegious. You got to have fish before you go if you want to be in his good graces and win some money.
We're not wasting money on food. It's slots? All slot machines.
Slots?
Yeah, that's all we do.
How long are you going for? Because there's serious slot rules and regulations.
We go with a certain amount of money. We never take out any extra money. We usually always, for the most part, often we break even. We sometimes come up, a little down, but we don't take a lot of money. But we also only play the penny slots.
Oh, okay.
So we don't go hard in the paint.
No.
So when you win, it's like you won $15. It's like a million to us.
It's a big day. Yeah,
that's where we live. I am very easily drawn by movie slots. So the Pickering, whatever, has a Rocky Balboa section. Takes all my money.
Oh, my God. That a girl. Yeah.
Any video imagery. Like there's what's that movie? Little Shop of Horrors. I'm in.
So you're there for the experience. You're not there to gamble a bunch of money and get rich. And you don't think
I'm not getting rich. I'm probably going to lose money. But I like a good sound effect. I like a good video image. I like the fanfare, even when I win $4.
Can't stand it. Speaking of the dopamine rush. Yeah, I know. What you're doing, you're just taking that addiction to TikTok to the next level. Unlearn 16. It's where you can find my friend Joanna Johnson. Last thing on any social media app, by the way, TikTok, Twitter, at Unlearn 16 podcast, which the first part of this is on her podcast, Unlearn 16, anywhere you get your fine podcasts. Class is in session, as always, with you. The last thing I want to tell you before you go slot gambling is, depending on how long you're going to be there, part of the rule is you got to bring some kind of lucky token. Like you got to put it on the slot machine, maybe some crystals.
Okay.
And if you're going to be there for more than 3 hours, a lot of people will go in with a diaper or what's called a stadium buddy. Yeah.
Why can they not just go to the bathroom?
Well, they don't want to leave if they're on a heater on a hot machine.
Like, that's so funny. People, there are rules at my casino. Like if you tilt your chair forward and have to go to the bathroom, nobody uses that machine.
Really?
Isn't that weird? Or if you leave a jacket, but like
Canada's too nice. Yeah.
Were very respectful.
Oh no, I would. If you got up for a tinkle, I would steal your machine immediately and hit it big, and then I'd rub it in your face, put it all over social media, and never see you again.
When I was there last time, and I'll tell this last story that I do have to go. Yeah. A lady won $15,000. $15,000.
And
here's how far in the hole I know she was. She must have been in. She didn't leave.
Yeah, because she was hoping to win 30.
She was down 30.
Go gamble. Don't be that woman.
I'm
Jill,
on it.
Great
to see you. I get $15,000. I promise I'm out.
Yeah, no, if you do, there's not a left to live on. Oh. I'm just letting you know. You might be able to buy a couple of things at a thrift shop, but that's it.
Listen.
Canadian thrift shop. MacTac jacket. Little Pac-Man shirt. Something cool. Go. Yeah, there you go. See you, Joe. Great to see you.
Thanks so much.
Anytime. Joanna Johnson. I love her. That was a spriteful conversation, was it not? Yeah. You know what I love about those is like, hey, we're going to go do this podcast. We start with Human Centipede. We move into parental rights. And then we talk about what it's like to be a good parent and be a good teacher. And we deal with the underlying intentions of certain people from stories from today. That's what a good history teacher can do. They can take historical examples and they can frame it today, draw a parallel and say, hey, what are we doing here? And there is nobody, and I mean, but nobody better than my friend Joanna. At Unlearn16 is where you can find her Twitter feed. You can find her TikTok feed. Beautiful educational pieces she likes to put out to help you understand how to be a better human. And we could all learn to do a little bit of that today, couldn't we? So anyway, give her a follow anywhere you get your fine podcasts as well. Unlearn16 is the name of the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for being part of the show. Really appreciate it. As always, brought to you by our friends at Cantorque, making rugged, hard work tools, torque wrenches. Nobody else can make them in the world. They're out of Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Tool rentals, calibration services. Cantorque offers a complete range of services and products, making them your one-stop destination for all your bolting needs, saving you time, effort, and hassle. 20 years in the business. Edmonton, Alberta, Canada is where they are headquartered. And they put a maple leaf on every single one of their products, which you can check out at their brand new website. Go to cantorque.com today. Colin's got a new website. You can upload his podcast there as well. Check out his services and every single one of Colin's products. He's overseas right now, but he is coming back. He's overseas on a sales trip, as a matter of fact, because that's what this guy does. He and his team offer torque solutions, Canada's leading industrial tool experts for heavy industry around the world, industrial torque tools made for you to spec by the best in the business right here in Canada. Go to cantorque.com for more information. Also brought to you by Muse Massage Spa. Go to Muse Massage Spa today. Check out their podcast at Muse on the Mic. It's a sexologist podcast, a sex advocate podcast, and the old Muse Massage Spa. Please go and upload and download their podcast on their Patreon, Muse on the Mic, as well as YouTube. And make sure you head to Muse Massage Spa to get $50 off the old Dean special. Make sure you give them a DM, a little DM, a little dim. That's why we call them dims now. Did you know that? All the cool kids are calling DMs dims. Dimmy. Because D and M are too hard to say. What kind of world are we living in? Go to Muse Massage Spa. For more details, as always, we're brought to you by Roam.auto. Right now, you can drive a car and you can do one payment and your insurance, routine maintenance, roadside assistance, absolutely everything is included. And it is absolutely affordable to drive a new vehicle with Roam. Go to Roam.auto. Browse their cars. Get yourself a vehicle in under 24 hours. All you got to do is fill out the paperwork and put in this promo code, Roam with Dean, R-O-A-M, Roam with Dean, and you'll get $150 off your first month. Roam.auto is changing the economy of buying a car by helping you subscribe to one. You don't have to pay for any losses, no lease or interest payments. Again, insurance, routine maintenance, everything, roadside assistance included. You just pay for your fuel, you go, flexible monthly passes, and then they'll deliver it to your house. You want a new car, they'll flip it. Hey, I want to try the Tucson this month. They'll flip it. Hey, I want to try an Elantra this month. They'll flip it. Hey, I want to try a brand new BMW eDrive. They'll flip it. That is what they do. It's an awesome service for anybody that's looking for an entry-level car or somebody who wants to try an EV, and it's an incredible service for somebody who's like, you know what, I'm going to take a break, take a beat, try an EV for a year, and I'm going to pay way less for that because my insurance and my maintenance is all taken care of. That's what Roam does. Go to roam.auto. Subscribe to a car today if you're in the greater Toronto area. That is where they are located today. They plan on branching out, but make sure you check them out no matter where you are. Roam.auto. Roam with Dean is your promo code. And, of course, brought to you by FactCheck, the world's most robust fact-checking software. If you want to verify what you're looking at, these are the people you want to get into bed with. Their beta test program is running now. If you want to join their beta test verified fact-checking team, you can go to factcheck.io. Positions are available, and they are accepting applicants at the moment. But what they really want to do is they want you to break their stuff so they can build it up and make it more robust. You got some scientists, data scientists, some evolutionary psychologists, and a few journalists who are like, let's make something that nobody else can mess with, including Elon Musk or anybody else that likes to keep you confused. This thing checks pictures, videos, audio, text, gives you sources. It gives you the full epistemology of where a lie or information comes from. It corrects the record and allows you to put it back out there with real information. It actually matters. Go to factcheck.io. Sign up for their beta test today, FAKTCHEK.io. That's it for us. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks to Joe for being with us. Make sure you sub and download our podcast. It's called Unlearn 16, anywhere you get our podcast. Ah, oh, we'll be back on Monday with Lachlan Cross. Thanks again. See you Monday. Maybe. You never know. This crazy world. Just happy to be here today. Bye.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
This is Charles Adler. After a few years of working on radio and television, The Charles Adler Show has evolved to a natural place in 2023. YouTube, podcast, and open RSS. You'll hear the show as it always has been delivered, concise, with context, clarity, and empathy. And as a bonus, the guests will be natural-born storytellers who won't fear telling stories that are personal and emotional. They won't fear uncomfortable questions. Most important, they won't fear me. Follow me on Twitter at Charles Adler and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.